Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, we're going to be talking about some important issues impacting women, specifically the latest on legislation aimed at assuring that employers pay women equally for doing the same work as men. We'll also be interviewing the backers of a proposed term limits initiative in La Mesa. We'll have findings of a new report on immigrant-owned businesses. In addition, we'll have an update on the latest efforts toward reopening the East County Performing Arts Center. Now, if you like going fishing or enjoying other activities on the San Diego River, you'll want to hear a disturbing report coming up. Aria Johansson will be sharing information in her Destination East County segment on some exciting festivals and events coming up this weekend. Plus, with the weather heating up, we've got some swimming pool tips to keep you safe, and a lot more, so stay tuned for today's East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
California women must work almost 15 months to earn what a man does in just 12. Equal Pay Day, which was marked on Tuesday, is part of an ongoing national campaign to increase awareness about pay inequality for working women. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez says female-headed households tend to be among the poorest and most dependent on public assistance. She's heading up a new committee to look at those issues and ask the tough questions.
What does this mean for women's roles in society and the family? What can be done to better promote self-sufficiency of female-headed households? What unique health problems and issues are raised by women in the workforce, and what can be done to adapt?
Gonzalez says half of today's workforce is made up of breadwinner moms.
Yet we don't have a law still that allows breadwinner moms to turn a few sick days so that they can take their kids to the doctor. These are the kind of challenges we'll explore and the type of policies we'll seek to find as solutions.
California's glass ceiling is actually a little better than the rest of the nation. Women here make 84 cents for every dollar a man makes. According to the White House, nationwide, full-time working women earn 77% of what their male counterparts earn. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Back in 1975, when I had my first job, men and women did not have equal opportunities. I worked in a music store where the manager told me that the men worked in the keyboard department, earning commission sales, but the girls worked in the sheet music and records department, at minimum wage. An enlightened assistant manager taught me how to take a piano apart and put it back together to teach customers what was inside, how to run a credit app, and how to write a contract. And sure enough, one day, I sold my first piano, and the manager was livid. Eventually, I worked my way up to become the company's first woman keyboard salesperson, but I never earned as much as men doing the same work. I was told that the men had families to support, and I didn't, so I would never earn the same amount. That was illegal then. But I didn't know it. Now Congress wants to pass a law that would make it easier to crack down on employers who discriminate against women and to help the federal government keep track of which employers are offering discriminatory pay. On Tuesday, as a slap in the face to women everywhere on Equal Pay Day, Senate Republicans blocked passage of the Paycheck Fairness Act for Women for the third time. The measure failed due to lack of a single Republican vote. The bill had aimed to provide more effective remedies for women who are paid less than men for doing the same work. Yeah, just like I was back in 1977. On the House side, San Diego Democratic Congresswoman Susan Davis is pushing for passage of a similar measure, H.R. 377. San Diego Democratic Congressman Scott Peters is a co-sponsor of that bill, which local Democratic Congressman Juan Vargas also supports. But East County Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter has previously voted no on a similar paycheck fairness measure for women, along with San Diego Republican Daryl Issa. When women succeed, America succeeds, said Congresswoman Davis, who's a senior member of the House Committee on Education and the Workforce. Equal pay is not just a women's issue, it's also a family issue, she said. Families increasingly rely on women's wages to make ends meet. Equal Pay Day should be a reminder to everyone that in order to strengthen the middle class, we need to ensure fairness in America, our Congresswoman said. Along with co-sponsoring the bill, Davis also signed a petition to demand a vote on H.R. 377 in the House, where the Republican leadership has so far blocked the measure from even being brought up for a vote. Republican leaders have claimed the measure isn't necessary because wage discrimination is already illegal. But without teeth in enforcement laws, discrimination appears likely to continue. Legislation signed by President Kennedy required that women and men be paid equally for performing the same work. But half a century later, women are still earning only 77 cents for every dollar earned by men. According to one analysis by the Department of Labor's chief economist, a typical 25-year-old woman, just like my daughter, working full-time would already have earned $5,000 less over the course of her working career than a typical 25-year-old man. If that earnings gap is not corrected by age 65, she will have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars over her working lifetime. Women earn less than men in every state and region of the country, and for women of color, the gap is even larger. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, we're going to be talking about some important issues impacting women, specifically the latest on legislation aimed at assuring that employers pay women equally for doing the same work as men. We'll also be interviewing the backers of a proposed term limits initiative in La Mesa. We'll have findings of a new report on immigrant-owned businesses. Now, if you like going fishing or enjoying other activities on the San Diego River, you'll want to hear a disturbing report coming up. Aria Johansson will be sharing information in her Destination East County segment on some exciting festivals and events coming up this weekend. Plus, with the weather heating up, we've got some swimming pool tips to keep you safe and a lot more, so stay tuned for today's East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
California women must work almost 15 months to earn what a man does in just 12. Equal Pay Day, which was marked on Tuesday, is part of an ongoing national campaign to increase awareness about pay inequality for working women. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez says female-headed households tend to be among the poorest and most dependent on public assistance. She's heading up a new committee to look at those issues and ask the tough questions.
What does this mean for women's roles in society and the family? What can be done to better promote self-sufficiency of female-headed households? What unique health problems and issues are raised by women in the workforce, and what can be done to adapt?
Gonzalez says half of today's workforce is made up of breadwinner moms.
Yet we don't have a law still that allows breadwinner moms to turn a few sick days so that they can take their kids to the doctor. These are the kind of challenges we'll explore and the type of policies we'll seek to find as solutions.
California's glass ceiling is actually a little better than the rest of the nation. Women here make 84 cents for every dollar a man makes. According to the White House, nationwide, full-time working women earn 77% of what their male counterparts earn. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Back in 1975, when I had my first job, men and women did not have equal opportunities. I worked in a music store where the manager told me that the men worked in the keyboard department, earning commission sales, but the girls worked in the sheet music and records department, at minimum wage. An enlightened assistant manager taught me how to take a piano apart and put it back together to teach customers what was inside, how to run a credit app, and how to write a contract. And sure enough, one day, I sold my first piano, and the manager was livid. Eventually, I worked my way up to become the company's first woman keyboard salesperson, but I never earned as much as men doing the same work. I was told that the men had families to support, and I didn't, so I would never earn the same amount. That was illegal then, but I didn't know it. Now Congress wants to pass a law that would make it easier to crack down on employers who discriminate against women and to help the federal government keep track of which employers are offering discriminatory pay. On Tuesday, as a slap in the face to women everywhere on Equal Pay Day, Senate Republicans blocked passage of the Paycheck Fairness Act for Women for the third time. The measure failed due to lack of a single Republican vote. The bill had aimed to provide more effective remedies for women who are paid less than men for doing the same work. Yeah, just like I was back in 1977. On the House side, San Diego Democratic Congresswoman Susan Davis is pushing for passage of a similar measure, H.R. 377. San Diego Democratic Congressman Scott Peters is a co-sponsor of that bill, which local Democratic Congressman Juan Vargas also supports. But East County Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter has previously voted no on a similar paycheck fairness measure for women, along with San Diego Republican Daryl Issa. When women succeed, America succeeds, said Congresswoman Davis, who's a senior member of the House Committee on Education and the Workforce. Equal pay is not just a women's issue, it's also a family issue, she said. Families increasingly rely on women's wages to make ends meet. Equal Pay Day should be a reminder to everyone that in order to strengthen the middle class, we need to ensure fairness in America, our Congresswoman said. Along with co-sponsoring the bill, Davis also signed a petition to demand a vote on H.R. 377 in the House, where the Republican leadership has so far blocked the measure from even being brought up for a vote. Republican leaders have claimed the measure isn't necessary because wage discrimination is already illegal. But without teeth in enforcement laws, discrimination appears likely to continue. Legislation signed by President Kennedy required that women and men be paid equally for performing the same work. But half a century later, women are still earning only 77 cents for every dollar earned by men. According to one analysis by the Department of Labor's chief economist, a typical 25-year-old woman, just like my daughter, working full-time would already have earned $5,000 less over the course of her working career than a typical 25-year-old man. If that earnings gap is not corrected by age 65, she will have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars over her working lifetime. Women earn less than men in every state and region of the country, and for women of color, the gap is even larger. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a Crime Beat report. Two East County men have told police that several shots were fired at them while they were fishing in a canoe along the San Diego River near the Friars Road overpass on Monday, April 7th. The men said they jumped into the water and swam to shore, dodging more bullets. They believe that someone was intentionally aiming to harm them. "They were trying to shoot us," one victim from Potrero told police, adding that he may never go fishing again. The men drove to 7-Eleven and called for help. Police searched the area but did not find anyone. This is Leon Thompson with a Crime Beat report. Two East County men have told police that several shots were fired at them while they were fishing in a canoe along the San Diego River near the Friars Road overpass on Monday, April 7th. The men said they jumped into the water and swam to shore, dodging more bullets. They believe that someone was intentionally aiming to harm them. "They were trying to shoot us," one victim from Potrero told police, adding that he may never go fishing again. The men drove to 7-Eleven and called for help. Police searched the area but did not find anyone.
By a unanimous vote, the El Cajon City Council on Tuesday asked the city manager to prepare a request for proposal for groups that want to rent or lease space at the East County Performing Arts Center. The theater has been closed for several years in need of major repairs. Recently, council voted to allocate funds for renovations and is now moving forward to attract additional tenants in hopes of reopening the theater next year. But some community members testified that they believe the city should first make good on its promise to hire a professional theater management company before making commitments to lock in time blocks for groups such as the Rock Church, which wants to use the theater for church services on Sundays. Ray Lutz, a co-founder of the Save ECPAC and Citizens Oversight Groups, has raised objections over the city manager holding a private closed-door meeting with a representative from the megachurch. Lutz contends that the meeting violated the Brown Act, the state's open government law. The city attorney, however, has maintained that the meeting was legal. Art Ballantyne, formerly with the El Cajon Historical Society, says he wants the city to commit resources to hire professional management first and foremost. "The theater was built as a performing facility, not a rental space," he said. But City Manager Doug Williford insists that hiring professional management now would be a waste of money. Any prospective renters or groups that want to lease the theater will first have to demonstrate financial stability and provide a proposal. Any proposals to lease or rent the theater will ultimately require the approval of the City Council before the curtain rises once again at the East County Performing Arts Center. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Welcome to Job Talk, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
This is Leon Thompson with the Business Report. In recent years, there has been considerable debate over how to modify the immigration system and how to fuel economic growth. Both are related, and both matter to not just the national economy, but our regional economy. There has also been renewed emphasis on growing our export capacity, as well as on small businesses as the engine driving the American economy. Now, a new report shows that immigrants are fueling that engine. According to the report from Renew Our Economy, titled Open for Business: How Immigrants Are Driving Small Business Creation in the United States, immigrants are more than twice as likely to start a business as native-born Americans. In 2011, immigrants formed 550 new businesses for every 100,000 immigrants in America, while people born in America formed only 270 new businesses per month for every 100,000 native-born Americans. This is not the only organization making these findings. According to a report from the Fiscal Policy Institute titled Immigrant Small Business Owners, a Significant and Growing Part of the Economy, 18% of small business owners in the United States are immigrants. The majority of these businesses are owned by Mexican immigrants, according to Fiscal Policy Institute, followed by people from the Middle East as well as Southeast Asia. What are these businesses? They are your corner store, the cleaners, restaurants, and tailor shops, even the Liz Taylor empire. Locally, we see this happening in places like El Cajon, City Heights, and the Little Saigon region, where immigrant-owned businesses are turning around blighted areas, breathing new life into communities. There is another role for these businesses as we try to grow an export economy in our region. More of these business owners are apt to engage in export activities. Immigrants already have ties in other countries, along with language skills as well as social networks. Therefore, it is often easier for these immigrants to penetrate foreign markets. Immigrants currently employ 1 in 10 American workers, and they add more than $775 billion to the economy. Any serious discussion of the economy has to include a serious discussion on immigration policies and how these immigrants are drivers of economic activity. The Small Business Administration is also aware of this pivot in economical development. The SBA writes in a report that business formation rates are even higher among immigrants than non-immigrants. The SBA is now in the process of developing the data necessary to understand how immigrants access capital. The SBA is also aware that 7.1% of immigrant businesses will export products when compared to 4.4% of native businesses. This is seen as crucial as the United States pivots towards the Pacific searching for export markets. So while we all talk immigration instead of focusing solely on negative sides of the issue, it makes sense to also look at the positive contributions that immigrants make to the United States. Creating one of every 10 jobs is important, and so is opening markets abroad. As the U.S. works to improve business conditions in the United States, California is particularly well-placed, as well as our San Diego region, to capitalize on these growing trends, since we have a large immigrant community from all over the world, and these immigrants will be part of our engine for economic recovery.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program has some hot rods, hoofbeats, Hoppin' Good Fun with the Easter Bunny, and a Sweet 16 party at the 16th Annual Morning Glory Brunch, served at St. Madeline Sophie's campus on East Madison Avenue in El Cajon on Saturday, April 12th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. St. Madeline Sophie's Center is an East County vocational day program for more than 400 adults with developmental disabilities. The brunch features a springtime ambiance at the center's own organic garden, food and beverages from over 20 local restaurants, artwork from St. Madeline Sophie's students and local artists, live music and entertainment on multiple stages, cooking demonstrations, boutique shopping, and the annual Great Frog Race. On Saturday, April 12th, the Wine and Cheese Trail Ride begins at 10 a.m. at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility in Campo. Participants can experience a trail ride with a wine and cheese tasting at trail's end. The trail ride includes a tour of Gloriosa Vineyard, heavy hors d'oeuvres, and wine tastings. Sign-ups on site begin at 9 a.m., with the ride starting at 10 a.m. Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility is located on Forest Gate Road in Campo. It is a former Army base that was once the last station of the famous Buffalo Soldiers. Saturday, April 12th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. is the day for the Hamul Kiwanis Hot Rod Show and Chili Cook-Off, with an all-class car show and chili cook-off with raffle prizes, food, live band and DJ, and children's play area at Pio Pico Thousand Trails on Otay Lakes Road in Hamul. Information on how and where to enter your chili, as well as antique vehicle registration, T-shirt orders, and more can be found on HamulKiwanis.com and our East County Magazine calendar. Proceeds for this event fund the Hamul Kiwanis Scholarship Program. The Easter Bunny will be available for the kids at the outlets at Viejas on Saturday and Sunday, April 12th and 13th, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. The outlets at Viejas are located on Willows Road in Alpine. The fourth annual College Area Taste will be held on Sunday, April 13th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will be showcasing over 20 diverse dining destinations in the college area. The Old Town Trolley will be there to assist tasters needing a lift from one area to the next. Tickets to the fourth annual College Area Taste can be purchased in advance or on the day of the event. The German-American Societies of El Cajon are having a special musical event on Saturday, April 12th, with special guest star Andy, a well-known folk singer of music and television in Germany. There will be 4 hours of entertainment and dancing, along with a sausage dinner. The event will be held from 6 to 10 p.m. at the German-American Society on South Mollison Avenue in El Cajon. Now for a preview of some upcoming East County events, including some events for Easter. The Cottonwood Golf Club is featuring a champagne Easter brunch in their pavilion and spring gardens with lake views on Sunday, April 20th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The brunch includes meat carving stations, a waffle station, entrees, dessert offerings, and much more. For more information, including the complete menu and to book reservations, contact the Cottonwood Golf Club at cottonwoodgolf.com. Saturday, April 19th is the last day to ride the Bunny Train, a real train out at the Campo Depot and Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. The Bunny Train has lots of Easter eggs and fun craft activities for the kids. Trains depart Campo Depot at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m., for a scenic one-hour round-trip journey through the mountains with the Easter Bunny. Advance reservations are required for this event and can be made at www.psrm.org. The 60th Annual Easter Pancake Breakfast will be held in Alpine on Easter Sunday, April 20th from 7 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at the Alpine Elementary School Auditorium on Alpine Boulevard in Alpine. For more information, contact the Alpine Chamber of Commerce at www.alpinechamber.com. The 19th Annual East County Garden Tour, put on by the Friends of East County Arts, Inc., takes place on Saturday, April 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. All six gardens offer a variety of settings to learn from and enjoy. Tickets for the 19th annual garden tour are available in advance or at any garden site the day of the tour. Advance tickets can be purchased on www.friendsofecarts.org. A beekeeping for fun and health workshop will be offered at the Alpine branch of the San Diego County Library System on Thursday, April 17th at 6 p.m. All ages are welcome. The address of the Alpine Library is on Arnold Way in Alpine, California. That's all for this week. Destination East County is brought to you by our listeners and a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section on our website, www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
The rains have gone and temperatures are expected to start rising again, and that means swimming pool season can't be far off. Every year, San Diego County's Department of Environmental Health, the DEH, inspects about 4,000 public swimming pools and spas to make sure they're clean and safe. Now they only inspect public pools, not private residential pools, so if you own a pool, they won't be making any house calls. But their experts can still share a few handy tips to help you keep your pool safe and looking great. Here's a top 10 safety list. Number 1. Watch the kids. This is rule number 1 for a reason. Swimming pools are designed to be fun, but every year children drown or get seriously hurt in residential swimming pools, almost always because adults stop paying attention. Teach kids how to swim and learn yourself if you don't know how. If your house opens directly into a pool, install a door alarm to alert you when a child opens it. If you don't already have a fence between your house and pool, consider putting one up. Kids wander around a lot and can find their way into the pool even if they're out of sight for only a minute. When children are in the pool, always watch them. And remember, water wings, styrofoam noodles, and other toys are not safety devices, and children wearing them should not be left unattended. Number 2. Check the fences. If you do have a fence and self-closing gate around your pool, check to make sure the spaces between each of its pickets and between the bottom rail and the ground are no more than 4 inches apart. Make sure the fence is at least 5 feet tall so children and animals can't squeeze through or climb over to get into an unattended pool. Number 3. Make sure your pool drain covers are visible and intact. Let's face it, if you can't get a clear look at your pool's drain covers, your pool water needs cleaning. If you can see them, make sure they're not broken or chipped and remind children not to play near them so they can't get sucked in and trapped. Number 4. Every pool should have 2 essential pieces of safety equipment. A life ring or life preserver with a diameter of at least 17 inches that can be thrown to help struggling swimmers stay afloat, and a safety hook to pull people to safety. You should also consider keeping a phone at the pool while swimming, so if you need to make an emergency call, you can do it quickly. Number 5. Repair any damage to decking, equipment, and pool area. Make sure the pool ladders and pool railings are secure so people aren't hurt when they rely on them to get in and out of the pool. Repair damage to decking to prevent people from tripping. Number 6. Don't swim if you're sick. Chlorinating your pool only does so much. You need to keep the germs out of the pool. Practice good hygiene. If there is an accident in your pool, be sure to clear the pool and follow guidelines for proper cleaning of the water. The next few tips are for keeping the pool looking great, which can also lead to better safety. Number 7. Test your pool water routinely. Testing the chemical balance of the water in your pool is one of the most important things you can do to make sure it's up to par. That's because that balance, which keeps your water disinfected, clean, and safe, can be easily thrown out of whack by heavy use, hot weather, rain, and lots of other things. To keep your pool safe, test the chlorine and pH levels at least twice a week and daily if you can. Number 8. Skim, brush, and vacuum your pool regularly. There's a lot of stuff out there that can get into your pool and make it look cloudy or green. Swimmers can carry in sunblock, oils, or other items. There's dust, sediment, and leaves blowing in the air that can make it all a lot harder for your filtration system to keep things clean. So use a hand skimmer to clean your pool's surface. Brush the walls and vacuum the floor often. Don't forget to remove any leaves and debris in the skimmer baskets. Number 9. Keep your deck clean. It only stands to reason. The less mess there is on the deck surrounding your pool, the less stuff that can be blown or carried into it. A good sweeping will go a long way to keeping your pool looking pristine. Number 10. Keep your pool filter clean. If you have a cartridge-based filter, make sure to check, clean, or replace your filters when they're dirty. If you're using a sand filter, make sure to backwash and clean your filter screens when they need it. You can find more pool safety tips and a video at the San Diego County News Center. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to the Voices of East County Magazine, on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My very special guest today is La Mesa Vice Mayor Christine Alicio and Craig Maxwell, a former mayoral candidate and the owner of Maxwell's House of Books in La Mesa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much.
Now, today we're here to talk about term limits, and the two of you have been working to get an initiative on the ballot that I understand would impose term limits for La Mesa public officials. Can you start by telling us what the deadline is for the signatures?
The deadline is May 15th. However, I believe we will probably be turning them in a little sooner than that. We have enough signatures right now to qualify for the ballot. We're just getting a cushion to add some more in case some of those signatures are not valid.
Now, tell us, if the measure passes, when would it take effect and potentially impact anybody who might currently be serving on the council?
Well, the effect is not retroactive. It doesn't apply to sitting politicians.
Ever, so they can be there 50
years? I believe
years.
That Christine is the only politician that is going to be affected by it directly, and you are the latest addition to the council. But the old guard on the La Mesa City Council will effectively be exempt from this.
Okay.
It will take effect for anyone who is elected in this year's election, mm-hmm. and they will have 12 years after that.
Okay.
And then everyone subsequent to that. And why it probably would affect me the greatest is because I didn't have that. Mark Arapostathis is the person who's been on the least compared to me. He's had 8 years. I will have only had 4 years prior to that, and then 12 years. The maximum I, as the new person, could ever serve in office would be 16 years.
Right, but then people like Ruth Sterling, who's been there many, many years,
yes.
Mayor Madrid, would not be affected by this.
No. I mean, they would have 3 more terms, which would put Mayor Madrid into his 90s before
yeah.
he was termed out.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Now, why do you believe that term limits in general are a good idea, Craig?
Well, term limits are actually a concept that goes all the way back to America's founding. Almost all of our founding fathers were term limit advocates.
Interesting.
They called it the principle of rotation at mm-hmm. that point. It's actually even much older than that. It goes back to ancient Rome and Greece. It's as old as Republican government itself. And it's really based on the idea that politicians acquire bad habits if allowed to stay in office for too long, and they need to be rotated.
Okay.
If I may read a quote. This is from Thomas Jefferson. He said, "My reason for fixing them in office for a term of years rather than for life was that they might have an idea that they were at a certain period to return to the mass of the people and become the governed instead of the governors."
That's an interesting idea.
which might keep alive that regard to the public good that otherwise they might be induced by their independence to forget.
Why specifically do you think that term limits are needed in La Mesa? The circumstances, of course, in La Mesa are a little different than, say, Congress or the Senate, where you have these massive districts, and unless you have millions of dollars, you can't win. La Mesa's 9 square miles. You know, a candidate could walk the precincts. There are newspapers that actually cover La Mesa, unlike some towns. And La Mesa, actually, I think, is somewhat fortunate in that usually there are several debates. So there are at least opportunities for people to hear messages other than just what some candidates, you know, slick paid mailer says. What specifically are the reasons why it's needed and needed now in La Mesa?
I think La Mesa, as a smaller community, is actually the perfect place for term limits. I've heard arguments against it at the state level, and I can sort of understand that. What La Mesa has no form of election reform at all. We have unlimited spending. You could spend $100,000 in La Mesa and get elected.
Really?
Yes, no reporting deadlines, none of the usual election reform that lots of other cities have.
That's an interesting point. We have seen an increase in spending in some of the La Mesa races.
I don't
know about all of them. I remember one a couple of years ago.
Considerable increase.
Yeah, there was a realtor that had $32,000 spent on this little local race by an out-of-town real estate group, which was, I had not seen that before in La Mesa, and we've had other examples since then.
Term limits are a method of election reform. The main thing that happens with candidates, incumbents, is they get money because they're an incumbent and people want to give to the incumbent to get some, presumptively, to get some sort of favor. Mm-hmm. And they have name recognition, and that is almost a hurdle that you cannot overcome.
But with all the money flowing into politics now, especially with these new Supreme Court decisions that have come down, couldn't term limits also open the door for special interests to come in and just buy a seat?
It could allow that, but again, it automatically posits a ceiling on the amount of good they're going to get out of that new investment. And I think what term limits does most of all is ensure that no special interest will have a great interest in placing a lot of money in a certain candidate, because after a certain period, either 8 years or 12, they will be gone.
Now, Mayor Madrid has stated that we already have term limits. They're called elections. What would be your response to that?
Art is not an overly gifted logician. And if you have one community with term limits and one without, it's the community with term limits that has term limits, and the community without it that doesn't. Term limits are a given time in office that you can spend in office, after which you must leave.
On the other hand, I guess devil's advocate question would be, what if people really like their elected official and they don't like who's running against them? Why shouldn't the people have the choice to send back the person they've always had and that they support?
Well, that's one of the things that is we took into consideration in drafting this initiative. We are not banning them for life from holding office. They get a cooling off period. They return to normal life, and then they can come back.
Ah, so you go out for 4 years?
One term, come back.
Okay. That's right.
So it doesn't preclude anyone from continuing in public service. It gives them a break and returns them to civilian life, so to speak, and then they can come back.
I was in Sacramento when term limits went through up there, and I recall at the time one of the big concerns after it passed at that level was that while you got some bad folks out, it also gave a lot more power to the bureaucrats, the committee consultants and so forth, because they were the only ones left that kind of had the institutional knowledge to say, well, you know, wait a minute, we tried that 25 years ago and it didn't work, and here's why. Is that a concern with term limits?
I think it is, and I think while there may be some truth to that charge on the state level, it would be less true in a society or in a community like La Mesa, where we have a weak mayor form of government, where the city staff effectively runs the city anyway. So it's not going to, I think, increase the power of bureaucrats who, in our town, already have most of the power to run the city anyway. We're not saying that term limits are a cure-all.
We're
just saying that it's an improvement.
I would add that most of the people who I've noticed have ever run for elected office, held elected office, their institutional memory of what happened, they weren't just sitting there just, oh, here I am. They've been following their town for a long, long time, and it's probably as good, if not better, than some of the people who hold office. That's kind of one of those red herring arguments. Well, what about institutional memory? Well, if you are called to serve, you probably have been following things in your town for quite some time. I know I certainly was for the 20 years prior to running to office.
Now, your campaign, and certainly one of the arguments in favor of term limits is the potential to reduce corruption. As you noted, Craig, sometimes politicians have been around a long time, have given into that temptation, or think that they're invincible. Your own campaign for the term limits circulated a flyer showing a photo of convicted San Diego Mayor Bob Filner, who some might say is the poster boy for a long-serving politician gone wrong, and others have said, well, that's kind of dirty politics because he doesn't have anything to do with La Mesa. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think we wanted to use a symbol of government employee or politician gone wrong that would resonate with people in the La Mesa area, and there was no one more dramatically implicated in that crime than Bob Filner. We're not saying that he has anything directly to do with La Mesa, but yeah, there are certain similarities between Filner and Mayor Madrid.
Now, it should be noted that La Mesa has a lot of long-serving officials, including Councilman Ernie Ewan, who just announced he's stepping down, Councilwoman Ruth Sterling, and, of course, the mayor himself. None of them, we should note, have ever been arrested or convicted of any crimes. And yet, conversely, in the state legislature, which does have term limits, it hasn't stopped three state senators from just getting indicted on serious crimes, most notably Senator Leland Yee on conspiracy to smuggle guns, I mean, from terrorist groups, among other things. So I guess the question is there any actual statistical evidence either way to show whether or not term limits has actually been effective in reducing corruption in the places that it's been enacted? Do you know?
I don't think that you can say you can say reducing corruption. I don't think that's quantifiable. If you're talking about being arrested for stealing, for gun running, for any number of things. Where corruption occurs is abuse of the office. It's when you have politicians who have been there so long that they go in and they harass business people, that they treat their fellow colleagues and citizens with disdain and disrespect. That's the sort of corruption that term limits can weed out. It may not be an actual crime they're committing, although as an attorney, I'm sure that you could push to say any number of politicians have committed X crime. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw that with Bob Filner.
No shortage of them, unfortunately.
And it's not that. The corruption is feeling that only you can make, you're the most powerful person there, and yes, using your office to effectuate your own personal beliefs versus your constituents' beliefs.
Yeah.
You stop serving the people and you serve yourself. That's the corruption.
That's why I mentioned Madrid and Filner as a comparison.
What specifically, other than being long-serving, Filner obviously has been convicted of crimes. Where do you see the comparison there?
Well, let's take a really obvious example that I think most people know about. Art Madrid is the only politician in East County history that I'm aware of who has, to quote George Orwell, done dirt on the First Amendment. You'll remember the case of Chris Tanner, a citizen who came forward about a public safety issue and implied that the council might have known about this public safety issue beforehand, before it actually took place. Mm-hmm. Art directed the city attorney to write a letter threatening this citizen with a lawsuit if he didn't retract the statement. Now, this drew the attention of First Amendment specialists and lawyers all over the county. Most of them came and said, you fellows on the council better withdraw that letter and apologize to this fellow, because you have not only violated the spirit of the First Amendment, but you've made the city vulnerable to a lawsuit. Every member of the council hastily withdrew the charge, except for Art Madrid, who said that not only would he not, he would do it again.
Now, Christine, I think on your part that it's commendable that you're willing to accept term limits for yourself as the only sitting council person that would actually be impacted. But it does also raise the question, do either of the two of you, who both run for office before and Christine currently holds office, do either of you have plans to run for mayor or, Craig, in your case, for the council again?
None whatsoever.
I do not intend to run for mayor. I'll qualify that. I do not intend to run for mayor in the foreseeable future.
Okay.
Would I ever run for mayor 10 years from now? Maybe.
When you're termed out.
Yes.
No, our term limits initiative applies to holding either mayor or council.
Really? So, even if you were termed out on 12, council, you could
I'm
not
termed
immediately
out,
run
no,
for mayor?
No, if I'm termed out on council, I can't run for mayor. I have to wait 4 years. I could serve 12 more years, and then I could be termed out for 4 years and come back and run for
Very
mayor.
Very interesting. Now, both of you have said this term limits campaign is not specifically about the current mayor, and it would not apply to him, at least not unless he's still running well into his 90s. But that said, I do need to say that we've had several people who were asked by his petition gatherers. This actually happened to me when I was approached outside a local store by someone who said, hey, the mayor's been around too long. Will you sign our term limits petition? Were you aware of that tactic? Were these hired petition gatherers or who was funding that? Did you know that was going on?
We were aware of it after it was brought to our attention, and mm-hmm. we did speak to the company that we were for our paid petition gatherers, and we said, no, this isn't about any one individual. You need to make sure they aren't saying this, because it really isn't. However, mm-hmm. I will say that if you wanted an example of why we need term limits, Mayor Madrid is a prime example of that. But it's not directed at him. It's about reforming it's election reform. It's creating a yeah. fair and level playing field for all candidates. And it's about candidates not being in office so long that they forget who they're serving.
There has been a lot of political jockeying to clip Mayor Madrid's wings, such as rescinding his travel budget and replacing him on Sandag. I believe, Christine, that you're the new representative there, by the way. Congratulations on your appointment. Not all the criticism has been out in the open, and I wanted to give you a chance, Christine, to respond to questions raised over at another news publication, La Mesa Today, where there were some negative comments about the mayor that apparently you vindicated. You posted them, but under a pseudonym that was later found to be your daughter's. So I wanted to ask if you'd clarify how that happened and why you, or for that matter, your daughter, would want to use a different name to post comments about what's going on in La Mesa politics.
My daughter is an extremely precocious, intelligent young lady. Mm-hmm. She is a minor. She is a high school student. She would not post under her own name. I never posted anything under a pseudonym. We share a computer. Mm-hmm. Didn't even realize she was logged in until I saw. Unfortunately, the publisher of that blog, who approves all comments, felt that it would be really interesting to let me post once as myself and once accidentally under my daughter's pseudonym. And there are tons of pseudonyms on that site. This is nothing new. Mm-hmm. And make political hay of it. The reality is she was logged in. I didn't log out. I posted something, and instead of coming to me and saying, whoa, what's going on, he decided to publish both comments and then create a stir. It's life in the big city when you're a politician. Am I going to stop my daughter, who's a high school student, from blogging about La Mesa things? No, I'm going to encourage her. Bring it on. This is the First Amendment, and to have a kid that cares about politics and follows things, I'm proud of it, but does she need a pseudonym? Yes, she does. She's a minor, she's a high school student, and she really should have that.
On a more positive note, I'd like to ask both of you, apart from term limits, what is your vision for La Mesa in the future, and what do you think is the most important issue that has not been addressed yet by the current mayor, or for that matter, the current council?
Well, since I'm part of the current council, I'll defer to Craig. For me, the key issue facing La Mesa absolutely cannot be ignored is our pension liability. Mm-hmm. Our city has been running almost in the red, and not almost in the red, has been running in the red. We have got to get a grip on that. We are collecting a sales tax, which was meant for one thing, more or less, and now is being used just to pay our bills. Financial health is paramount to the city. You cannot protect your citizens with police and fire. You cannot have quality services if your city is going bankrupt. And, you know, you mentioned cutting travel budgets, doing this, doing that. My theory in life and in government is a penny saved is a penny earned. And when we are running in the red, relying heavily on a sales tax that has a sunset clause in it, you don't spend anything that you don't need to be spending.
Well, now, I will ask one quick question on the travel thing that you mentioned. The mayor has told us that he brought in over $3 million in grants from going to the U.S. Mayor's Conference. So isn't it sometimes the investment in a little travel might pay off?
Unfortunately, that's a very false and misleading statement by the mayor.
Yes. We'll have to look into that. Anyway, Craig, what is your vision for La Mesa, apart from the term limits, and what do you think is the most important issue that should be addressed for the future?
I have the same primary concern. We recently learned that unfunded pension liability had been revised upward from $30-odd million to $60-odd million, and we're paying millions of dollars of interest on that every year. Our city is broke. And, you know, we're talking about...
How would you solve that? It's one thing to identify the problem, but what's the solution in your view?
Well,
Christine, that might be better directed at you.
Go ahead.
Christine will have more to say about this than I, but I think the first thing that we have to do is get our public employees to contribute more to their own pension and retirement funds.
Do you agree with that, Christine?
I strongly agree with that, and it's going to be a difficult change. However, it used to be that when you were a civil servant working for the government, you got increased benefits because your salary was significantly less than in the private sector. That's no longer the case. You have a ton more benefits and you make more money, and there's got to be an equalizing of that. And we also need to, and I know we have discussed most recently at our city workshop last month, the idea of paying down our PERS liability with big chunks of money, whether it's $1 million, $1.5 million, I think that's a good idea. You know, if we can get some money and not have to spend it immediately from a different source, maybe the sale of our old police station site.
So do you support selling the old police site, which was part of the Civic Center Plaza, as opposed to having that used for some sort of public purpose?
I think that we do plan to sell it. I think it will be used for that. Our city hall is old, but my house is older than city hall, and it suits me just fine. I think it's okay, too.
Well, I think Americans and La Masons may differ in their views on how to address political reform, whether or not term limits is the best answer or the only answer. But I think that most people today would agree that there's growing concern over the influence of special interests in politics. Now, two Supreme Court decisions, Citizens United and then another one last week, have thrown out most of the campaign finance limitations so that now corporations and very wealthy people can give almost unlimited money to PACs and political parties for spending in campaigns. Regardless of whether or not your term limits measure passes, are you concerned about the growing trend of money in politics, and would you support anything else, like a constitutional amendment to address that, or public financing of campaigns, or some other means to limit the influence of money on political campaigns?
Personally, I do think there should be some form of limits. However, and as an elected official in La Mesa, I don't think it's our purview to talk about constitutional amendments. That's a federal government issue. In my perfect world, we wouldn't need to limit people's ability to donate, but we're in an imperfect world. In the perfect world, maybe we wouldn't need term limits, but we're in an imperfect world, and there has to be election reform of some sort. It's not a Democrat, a Republican issue.
Whatever else the issues in La Mesa may be, it's not partisan, actually. There are all five Republicans on the council. The mayor's a Republican, so that's not...
Yeah, it's not. And campaign finance reform of any kind should not be a partisan issue. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, on both sides of the fence, there is tons of money being spent.
Yeah.
It's disturbing to me.
What do you think, Craig?
It is to me. But I think, again, to echo Christine, this is not the kind of issue that we're going to deal with effectively at the level of local politics.
Now, there have been a number of cities and even counties and some states, actually, that have passed resolutions calling on Congress to initiate a constitutional amendment, which has to start there, and then the states have to approve it. So I guess there can be a groundswell from the bottom up, too, or it can be top down,
right,
for what
yeah.
that's worth.
Yeah, I would say that another good argument for term limits, though, would be the call by some, and I would include our mayor in this, mm-hmm. to participate by spending time and money on what I call extracurricular activities, issues like global warming and fair trade that really don't have a whole lot to do with the sound administration of the city. They're broader issues, they're broader themes. It's not that they're illegitimate. It's not that they shouldn't be considered by someone, but I don't think that they have much place in local government.
So you don't think a local government should do anything to address climate change concerns? I mean, if no local government did anything about it, if we left it all up to the federal government, would enough really be done?
I don't think that it should be ignored for no reason. I just believe that the degree of efficacy at that level is very low. Mm-hmm. I believe that the kind of legislation that's going to make a difference is going to have to come from the state or federal level. Let me emphasize that I do believe that global warming is a real thing, and I would not be at all surprised if mankind was contributing to it in some way.
So you're a green Republican in a way.
Correct. However,
Art, we should say, too, has always kind of positioned himself as a green man.
Yes, let me back up. I do take issue with small-town politicians who use this issue to posture as much as anything. In other words, I'm questioning their sincerity, and I really think that we would be better advised to spend our time and money on other issues that more directly affect the welfare of La Mesa citizens.
Well, I'm going to let the two of you have your closing words here and let people know where, if they want to get more information or get involved in the term limits campaign in La Mesa, where can they find out more?
They can call me, email me, talk to me, but they can also go to www.lamesatermlimits.com or find us on Facebook, La Mesa Term Limits. You can go to Maxwell's House of Books to get a petition. Mm-hmm. You can also go to All Things Bright and British to get a petition. We will come to you if you call. And you can call me, which is 619-806-4058, or check out our Facebook page or our website.
We've been speaking with Craig Maxwell and La Mesa Vice Mayor Christine Alicio about the term limits measure that they're seeking to put on the La Mesa ballot in November. And I want to thank both of you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.